So, hello, hello and welcome. I'm now talking about eukaryotic cells and I'm on page 7 in the book, okay? Eukaryotic cells. Plant and animal cells, these are eukaryotic cells and they are characterized because they have a nucleus, okay? In contrast to prokaryotic cells, which do not. And in the top box, it says the structure of eukaryotic cells. And when we look at a eukaryotic cell under the microscope, so when we, under the electron microscope, when we look at its ultrastructure, we can see many different parts, cell organelles inside a eukaryotic cell. And they can be, they're all made of, or so they're surrounded by membranes. So this means that when we, eukaryotic cells show something that we call compartmentalization. And this means that the cell, inside the cell, there are different compartments, different sections, which contain all different enzymes. Okay, so for example, the nucleus itself, that is a compartment. It's a separate, it's separated from the other part of the cell by membranes. Or the mitochondria, that's a separate compartment because it's again separated from the rest of the cell by a membrane. Chloroplast, Golgi body, all of these things that we see in a cell. However, it is like this, that there are certain cell organelles that have only a single membrane, and there are certain cell organelles that have a double membrane. Yeah? So the ones with a single membrane is the rough endoplasmic reticulum, the smooth endoplasmic reticulum, the Golgi body or Golgi apparatus, the lysosomes and the vesicles and vacuoles. They all have one membrane, and the organelles that have a double membrane, that's the nucleus, the mitochondria and the chloroplast. They have two membranes. And the interesting thing is now, what about the ribosomes? How many membranes do ribosomes have? Well, they don't have any membrane at all. And so the question is now, is a ribosome now a cell organelle or not? It's a little bit a question of definition. I mean, what we say is that eukaryotes have membrane-bound cell organelles like chloroplasts, mitochondria, nucleus, and so on. But prokaryotic cells do not have these membrane-bound cell organelles, right? Because they have all of the things just floating around freely. Yeah? And the ribosome is not a membrane-bound organelle. And when we say membrane-bound, then I'm not saying that it sticks to the membrane, okay? That might be because it's kind of binding to the membrane. That's not what I mean. Membrane-bound in this case means made of membranes, okay? And then on the top of page 7, on the right, it says drawing eukaryotic cells. And I have to be very honest with you, I think this is pretty much the worst drawing. Because what they want to do is they want to compare plant and animal cells. On the left side, it should be the part of a plant cell, on the right side, an animal cell. But in reality, that's not a very good one. Okay, I think the drawings on page one, comparing plant and animal cells are, even though also quite simple, much better. A couple of reasons here is because the plant cell has a large central vacuole, which is not shown. The mitochondrion is shown on the side of the animal cell, but actually the plant cell also has a mitochondrion. The lysosomes are actually mostly found in animal cells, but it's drawn on the plant cell part. You see, I don't quite like the drawing over here. The Golgi apparatus is also shown more on the animal cell side, but actually plants also have it. So I think it's a very inconsistent drawing, okay? I'm just saying. Yeah, the rough endoplasmic reticulum, or RER, contains those black dots, and those black dots, these are the ribosomes. And as a matter of fact, in this drawing, the ribosomes, neither the free ribosomes nor the ribosomes which are on the RER, the ribosomes are not labeled at all, right? Because the dots that you see in the plant cell, the non-labeled dots on the left side, these are the ribosomes, free ribosomes. But they're also drawn on the plant cell side, but actually the animal cells also have the free ribosomes floating around, okay? So, oh my gosh, I tell you, I don't like this drawing. But maybe sometimes if you understand why the drawing is a bad drawing, then I have to admit, then maybe we've even learned something here, right? So maybe in that sense, it's not even that bad that it's a bad drawing, because it helps us to understand a little bit better of what's not right here. Okay. So, okay, doesn't matter. In any case, page 7 on the bottom, identifying organelles and deducing functions. So first question, is this a transmission electron micrograph or a scanning electron micrograph? Well, it's actually a two-dimensional picture. Yeah. So it's a transmission electron micrograph. Over here on the left side, again, we have a nucleus. Yeah, it's kind of has lighter and darker regions. That's the DNA. And you have the rough endoplasmic reticulum. And you have a Golgi apparatus on the labeled on the right side, and mitochondria and those large round things called the vesicles. And but just by looking at this picture, I already know that the cell is producing a lot of substances, because the rough endoplasmic reticulum with its ribosomes on top produces proteins. And these proteins are then passed on to the Golgi apparatus over the vesicles, and then to the outside. And all of this stuff requires energy. So that's why you have the mitochondria here. So this one seems to be a cell that actually produces proteins that are to be secreted. Okay? And it says here, well, actually, even in the label, presumably the enzymes in pancreatic juice. Ah, of course, because the pancreas cell. And the pancreas produces enzymes, right? And we know that it releases a lot of enzymes, because all of the enzymes and all of the proteins that are released are made on the RER. And if you see a picture or of a cell containing a lot of RER and Golgi apparatus, then you know that this cell is probably actively producing some enzymes or some substances or hormones or whatever, right? And mitochondria, they release energy, and that's also needed. And the vesicles are big and a very clear indicator that it's secreting something and producing something, because the vesicles transport all the enzymes to the outside. Okay, so okay, I'm flipping the page now, and I'm now on page 8. And I continue now on page 8, and we talk about membranes now. Okay, essentially the topic here relates to both prokaryotic and eukaryotic cells, because prokaryotic cells have the plasma membrane on the outside. Eukaryotic cells, of course, also have a plasma membrane, and all the other membranes that you can find around cell organelles. Yeah? So I'm on page 8. Top left box is called the Davzin-Danieli model of the 1930s. And Davzin and Danieli, what they've discovered is, well, membranes are made of phospholipids and proteins. And then they said, okay, I don't know, how can they be put together? And they proposed the following model. They said, well, in the middle you have a phospholipid bilayer, and on the outside you have the protein. So it's kind of like it's like a sandwich. On the outside the protein, and in the middle you have the phospholipid bilayer. Okay, because they found out that membranes are made of proteins and phospholipids. Okay. And that's basically what they shown. And however, then in the 1950s or so, the first electron micrographs were made, and the people started to look at cells, and then they actually discovered, well, actually, that's not how it looks like. Okay, almost, but not quite. Okay, so what we have on the bottom, let's have a look at the photograph on the bottom. It says the electron micrograph of biological membranes, and it says here it's less than 5 nanometers across in the two arrows in the photograph. So you see that the biological membrane is quite thin, and using electron micrographs you can already see that there are two layers. The membrane looks, it's one single membrane, okay, but it looks like there are two lines. And the reason is it looks like there are two lines because one membrane is made of a phospholipid bilayer, so two layers of phospholipid. That was correct, okay, but then later on in the 1950s, when they looked at cells under the electron microscope, Singer and Nicholson, they discovered that actually that's not quite how membranes look like, okay? So they have done the following, and now I'm on the Singer and Nicholson model on page 8 on the right side. They've done the so-called freeze fracture analysis. What they've done is they've frozen cells, yeah, they froze it, and this made them very brittle, and then they cracked the cells open. Okay, and by cracking and breaking the cells because they were frozen, you could then actually see the proteins in the membrane being frozen in place. Okay, and then they put the whole thing under the microscope, and they saw something that you see in point one in the Singer and Nicholson model in the right box. There's a photograph, and you see those little dots there, which are kind of sticking out. So you're looking right at the top, on top of a membrane. Okay, and these dots are basically proteins that are sticking out of it. Okay, out of the membrane, right? And so what they've done is, and that's where I'm right now in point two, where you see now a cross-section, a drawing of the cross-section, you can now see that the proteins are embedded in the membrane. Okay, they're not just on the surface, but they're kind of floating in between the phospholipids. And that is now the interesting, and it's also the correct model of a membrane. Okay, and those parts of the protein which are polar or which are hydrophilic are on the outside, and they are in the drawing, they're made dark gray. And the hydrophobic part, the water-fearing part, the fatty part, these are the parts of the proteins that are labeled white on the point two on page 8 here, right? And that is basically what they've proposed, and they were also able to show that these proteins, they're not locked in place, but they're able to float around inside the membrane, so they're able to move. So the membrane has a very, fluid characteristic to it, okay? So it's very dynamic. It's like a soap bubble. You have to imagine that membranes are like soap bubbles. And what they've done is, and that's now point three, they have now fused membranes. And here they labeled it red and green. Of course, they didn't use it red and green, but they did use it. It was fluorescing. They used fluorescent dyes. Maybe it was shining red and green. And when they fused it together, the two membranes were able to mix. It was not like this, that on one half the new cell was red and on the other one it was green, but rather it was like this, that it completely mixed. And this kind of showed a little bit that the membrane is fluid in nature. And it's a little bit like if you're trying to fuse two soap bubbles together, well, then you will get a bigger soap bubble, but you can actually see the light shining, and that the whole soap kind of floats around, and it becomes one unit. It becomes one thing, and it's fluid, right? So that is basically what they were able to show, and that's why this model of Singer and Nicholson is called the fluid mosaic model of membranes. Okay, and that is something that we have on page 9. Okay, so on page 9 we have the fluid mosaic membrane model. So I'm on page 9, the fluid mosaic model of a membrane, and I'm going to now, you have to be able to draw this, okay? But what I'm going to do now is I'm simply going to explain you the different parts here. Okay. The first thing that you want to do is you want to identify one single phospholipid, and you're going to see that this one phospholipid has this round oval head, and then there are two tails. And the head of the phospholipid is hydrophilic in nature. This means that it is water soluble, it's water loving, and therefore it's on the outside, because on the outside that's where we have the water. And the hydrophobic hydrocarbon tails, these are the fatty acid tails, and they are they don't like water. So they will now stick together. So tail goes to tail because the tails don't like to be next to the water. Okay. So a membrane is hydrophilic on the outside and hydrophobic on the inside. And of course, what we're doing right now is we're looking at a cross section. Okay. And one membrane is a phospholipid bilayer. It's really important for you to understand that just two layers of phospholipid makes one membrane. So this is a single membrane, not a double membrane. Okay, because if you remember when we talk about the cell organelles that have two membranes, like the nucleus, chloroplast, and mitochondria, they have two membranes, right? They have two of the whole. They have two phospholipid bilayers. Okay, because one phospholipid bilayer is a single membrane. Now between the phospholipids, you can see cholesterol. Okay, and this cholesterol is labeled on the right side, and the cholesterol likes to be next to the fatty acid tails, the hydrocarbon, the hydrophobic tails, because cholesterol is also very fatty and does not like water. And in dark gray, you can see the proteins. And these proteins are embedded in the phospholipid bilayer. And the integral proteins, they are floating around in the phospholipid bilayer. And the peripheral proteins, they can be found on the surface of the membrane. You can also see that some of them are called glycoproteins, and the glycoproteins, they have a sugar chain attached to it. And you can see this sugar chain, the little chain sticking out of the protein in the glycoprotein, that is sugar, usually glucose or other sugars. And some of the proteins, they have a hole in the middle. They're called channel proteins or pump proteins, and they're important for allowing substances to pass through. Okay, so we've got the integral proteins, we've got the peripheral proteins, we've got the cholesterol, we've got the phospholipids, okay? And all of them, they make up the membrane. Now, the point is, what holds the membrane in place? Well, actually, it's water, you know, but if you have the phospholipids and all these proteins, and if you mix them together and in water, because cells are made of water, to a large extent, the phospholipids will arrange in this way automatically in a process called self-assembly, because this is the most stable. It's the most stable way. Yeah. So phospholipids, the next box in the middle on the left side, Phospholipids are amphipathic. What does this mean? This means that they have a hydrophilic head and a hydrophobic tail. So they're both, they're water soluble and they're not water soluble. So on one side they're water soluble and on the other side they're not. And this is called amphipathic, okay? And this basically means, that's what I just explained, if you mix them with water, then they will go automatically in a process called self-assembly, they will go into a bilayer, a phospholipid bilayer. And then we move over to cholesterol on the right side. And the cholesterol is important because it is important for adjusting the fluidity and the flexibility of the membrane. Okay, so that is one thing. It adjusts the fluidity of the membrane. And the second thing is because cholesterol is very hydrophobic. It's very fatty. This prevents or reduces the other substances which are hydrophilic, more hydrophilic, to go through the membrane. Okay, so for example, if you have sodium salt, right, very hydrophilic, very water soluble, it doesn't want to go directly through the membrane between the phospholipids and between the cholesterol because that's hydrophobic. It does not want to go through so-called enemy territory. Okay, and the hydrophobic part with the cholesterol and the hydrophobic tails of the phospholipids, yeah, that's enemy territory, and the sodium does not want to go through there. Right, so the cholesterol is really important for also deciding which substances are allowed to go through or not, and especially hydrophilic substances like salt, sodium, and so on, they do not want to go through because of the cholesterol. Okay, so that is so these are the two functions of cholesterol. It reduces the fluidity of the membrane and it reduces the permeability of the membrane, specifically for hydrophilic substances. Okay, so let's move on. Membrane proteins on the bottom of page 9. Well, some of these membrane proteins are actually more relevant for high-level material, and sometimes the picture mixes different functions together. Okay, so here again, I think it's not quite ideal, but I would at least remember a few of these examples here. Okay, you see again a very simplified drawing of a cell membrane. It's labeled outside and inside the cell, and you see a whole bunch of structures that are kind of sticking in, going through the cell membrane. The first one is a hormone receptor. And if you see this little dark gray hexagon with a small arrow, this dark gray thing, that's supposed to be the hormone which now goes to the membrane protein, namely the hormone receptor. And when this hormone attaches to the hormone receptor, then the hormone receptor on the inside part of the membrane will send a chemical signal to the nucleus. Okay, and it will tell the nucleus to do something. Okay, the second example is caladrin. Cadherin, oh wow, is an integral protein, of course, because it goes through the membrane, and it's there to allow cells to stick together. I mean, especially in multicellular organisms, we don't fall apart. Why is that? Because the cells stick together. What makes it stick together? Well, it's this membrane protein. So the next one, it's higher level stuff, okay, for electron transport. Some of the membrane proteins are able to carry electrons. I mean, there's not a lot more to say here. And the next one example is cytochrome oxidase, which is an immobilized enzyme. Honestly, I'm not so happy about this here, is because it kind of mixes the cytochrome C for electron transport with the immobilized enzyme. But just know that there are certain enzymes which are inside the cell membrane, and which are therefore able to catalyze reactions. So the next one, you have receptors for neurotransmitters and a channel for facilitated diffusion. There you see a channel protein over here, and you see that there is a little hole in the protein which allows substances to diffuse through. Substances that normally would not go through the cell membrane can go through a channel protein, and this process is called facilitated diffusion, but more on that later. Okay, and so you need a concentration gradient, and then the substances move passively from an area of high concentration to an area of low concentration, which is down a concentration gradient. And however, there are also membrane proteins for active transport. And those membrane proteins, now they require energy. These are protein pumps, and they will pump substances across the membrane. This requires energy. Okay, so you see a whole range of membrane protein functions. And of course, different membranes have a different function. because and the different membranes do different things is because they have got different membrane proteins, okay? And whatever the cell organelle or the cell needs to do, that's why it has different membrane proteins, and because they do all different tasks, okay? So that was, again, a lot of information right now, okay? At least know a few of these examples, and also know, I mean, I remember there was once an IB question was asking like this: which one of the following is not a function of a membrane protein? And one of them was, I think, temperature control. No, that's not one of. That's nothing. Okay, temperature control is not, is not a function of a membrane protein, right? I don't see no temperature control anywhere. Yeah, so that is, that's basically it. Okay, I wish you a nice day. All the best.